me a job.
How old were you then?
Well, I was 20 then. I was 20. And I decided what I wanted to do. I said, I think I'd like to be a telephone operator. And so I went to the telephone company, which is in the same location now, down on Flower Street. I think it's 2nd and Flower, 1st and Flower. Anyway, it's still there, wherever it is. And I went down there to put in an application to get a job as a telephone operator. And they gave me the application, let me fill it out, tested my voice and played it back, and said, oh, you have a nice voice. You'd make a nice telephone operator. But we haven't decided how I colored yet. They built me up for an awful letdown. They went to all that trouble to let me take the test and fill out the application and then tell me that. Oh, I was so hurt.
Were you aware of that when you applied?
No, I wasn't aware of it because, see, I had never worked before. And I didn't know about all these prejudices about work conditions, you know.
It was legal at the time for them to do that.
I don't know, I guess so. No, I guess it wasn't. I guess it wasn't, but nobody was doing anything about it. Yeah, no, it wasn't legal. No.
But you didn't have the experience that told you, I can't go work for their telephone company because they're not hiring African Americans.
Like, no.
Like, I want to be an operator, I'm going.
Yeah, and I was naive. I just didn't know any better, you know. I just thought, well, if I qualify, they'd give me the job, you know. But, well, it wasn't legal, but however, I guess they just, nobody, we didn't have NAACP then, you know, and nobody was pushing them to do that, to hire blacks, you know. So, but anyway, I went on home, heartbroken, no job. And my dad's telling me all the time, you don't have to work, you got a home. As long as I got a home, you got a home. But I wasn't satisfied with that. That was their home. I wanted something of my own, you know. So I said, I'm not going to live here and let my folks take care of me and my child, you know. And then some old dumb people, I call them dumb, came telling me, you don't have to work. You can get on the state because you have a child and your husband is dead. I said, I don't want to get on no state. I'm able to work. I'm going to get me a job. And so just so happens, shortly after that, a Japanese man who had a theater across the street from my dad's garage. He had his garage at 23rd and Central Avenue. And there was a little theater called the Gaiety Theater right across the street. And he had a white cashier. And he was a Japanese owner, though. And all of a sudden, he fired his white cashier. I never did know why he fired her. And he ran over to my father's garage and ask him, because he used to let my dad work on his car, so he knew my dad. And he said, Dick, do you know a nice little colored girl I could get to be my cashier? So Papa said, yeah, my daughter. So he called me at home. It was at night. The girl had gone to work, and he got angry at her about something, I don't know what, and fired her right on the spot. And he needed a cashier right then and there. And so Papa called me, and I was home. And he says, can you come down right away? I got a job for you. And I rushed and got dressed and ran down there. And the man put me in the cashier's booth. And the tickets were only 10 cents. And he stood there and watched me to see if I knew how to make change, you know. Well, I always was good in math, even though I hadn't even finished high school. I married, you know, before I finished high school. But I was good in math, and I knew how to count money. So he was satisfied that, oh, you can handle it. So he went on off and left me in there selling the tickets and handling the money, you know. And I didn't make any mistakes. And so he was satisfied, so I got the job. And so that was my first job, cashier. And I was the first colored cashier in L.A. And the California Eagle was the colored paper then. And they had a big write-up about it in the paper. About the first, this Japanese hiring a colored girl, first colored cashier in L.A. And so I made the papers then. Yeah, that was a big deal, is right, yeah. And it was a nice little job because I could be home with my baby during the day. And at night, well, I only went to work at 6:30. I went to work at 6:30 and I got off at 9:30. So I only worked 3 hours, you see. And so That made it real nice, you know. And then I had a car. Papa would let me. I still had a car, you know. And so I'd drive myself to work, drive back home. Didn't take long, you know, back and forth.
Did you get to watch the movies?
Yeah, free. Got to watch the movies free. And he let me bring my little boy with me. My son was about 2 years old by then. He was 2 years old. And so he was a good little boy, too. He wasn't one of these kind of run around, tear up things, you know. And I'd take him with me to work sometimes when he hadn't seen the picture. And so he'd sit in the booth with me until he got tired. Then he'd go sit in the movie and look at the movies until he got tired. Then he'd come back and sit in the booth with me. And so then I let him start making change. He learned how to make change and sell tickets. Because 10 cents, you know, most people would have their 10 cents anyway. They didn't have to make much change. If they had 10 cents, if they didn't have 10 cents, they'd have a quarter. So all you have to give them is a nickel and a dime back. So I taught my son how to do that, how to give him the change back. Oh, he thought he was something great because he could sell tickets in the theater, you know. This man was very nice. He let me do that, you know.
And how long did you work there?
Oh, I worked there a long time, about 3 or 4 years, until I got a better job. Let's see, this is 25, 27. I worked there 4 years because that was in 20, no, let's see, no, 2 years, because this was in 27 when my husband had died, 27. And the Lincoln Theater was built in 29, which was right across the street from this little Gaiety Theater. So the Lincoln Theater was a new theater and a big theater. So I worked at this little theater until they built a new one. Then I got a job over there because I was an experienced cashier now, you know. So I got a job over there making more money. So I became a professional cashier, first-class cashier at the Lincoln Theater. And I stayed there for several years, too, until the Tivoli Theater, which was at 43rd and Central, the Tivoli Theater decided that it would change over to colored. It was all white and had all white help. But they decided, and this was in 40, what, no, when was it? 40-something. No, 29, 31, this was in 31 when, see, I worked with the Lincoln 2 years, working with the Lincoln from 29 to 31. And when the Tivoli decided to change over, then they offered me a job there, and they paid more than I was getting at the Lincoln Theater. So I got the job at the Tivoli Theater as a cashier. And then they hired all colored usherettes. They had ushers there. And a doorman, colored doorman. So they changed over. And they even had a colored projectionist. The guy who was running the movies, he was colored. Everything, they just changed over completely. So then I worked there until I got interested in real estate. I used to love to play bridge. And so I was playing bridge. Well, my husband had died then, and I was playing bridge with a man that was in real estate business. And so he said, "Oh, you're so good at bridge. Why don't you learn real estate? Anybody who loves to play bridge can be a good real estate salesman. So why don't you learn real estate?"
Why is that?
Well, I guess your mind and mathematics just thought automatically goes with real estate. Oh, in the meantime, though, I did go back to school and finish high school before. Well, no, that's right. No, I didn't go back to finish high school until 1930. That's right. All this happened before I went back and finished high school. Yeah. So I was going around with this Mr. Ennis was his name, and he loved bridge, and so he also was a real estate broker. So he said, "Come on into my office. I'm going to teach you real estate." So I did. I went to his office. And then I said, "Well, I better go to school and learn this the right way." So I went to night school and studied real estate and got my real estate license. So from then on, I've been selling real estate. I sold real estate for about 44 years as a salesman. And when I took the exam, I could have been a broker, too, for the same exam. But I didn't want to have my own office. I just wanted to be a salesman. And so it just cost $2 for the salesman's license and $5 for the broker's. But the same examination entitled you to either one. So I became a salesman. So I always worked as a salesman. And I did very good in real estate. I speculated some. I'd save my money when I'd make it, and I'd always have a little nest egg set aside. And when a good deal would come along, I'd buy it and then resell it and make some more money like that. And so I really enjoyed it. So it was fun.
Do you remember your first sale?
Yeah, my first sale. A guy came into the office looking like a tramp. He had just come from work. He was work, and he had come out here by himself from Louisiana, and he wanted to send for his family, and he couldn't find any place to rent because we hadn't built all these apartments that we have now, and so rentals were scarce, so people had to buy in order to get a place. So he decided, I'm going to buy me a house so I can get my family out here. So he came in the office with his dirty work clothes on, and nobody wanted to be bothered with him because he looked so bad. Well, I'm used to people with greasy clothes on because my father was a mechanic, so it didn't bother me, you know. So I said, well, I'll take him. So I went and took him, and I said, could I help you, sir? And he said, yeah, I want to buy a house. I said, what size house do you want? He said, I want a two-bedroom house. And how much you want to pay down? I want to pay I got $1,000 to pay down. And so I went and looked at my list of listings that we had, and I picked out two that we had that I figured would fit his pocketbook. So one would look worse than the other one. So I showed him the worst looking one first. Then when I showed him the second one, oh, that looked real good. You see, neither one of them were real good, nice, but one was better than the other one, you know. And so when he saw the second one, he said, oh, I'll take it. And I said, okay, we'll have to write it up. You have to give me a deposit. And he says, how much deposit you want? I said, well, a couple hundred would be okay. He said, what about $1,000? He pulled out the whole down payment and gave it to me. $1,000 down. That was what it was, $1,000 down. He gave me the whole $1,000. He was carrying that money around in his pocket. And I said, you shouldn't be carrying all this money around in your pocket. He said, well, I decided I wanted to buy a house. And when I found what I want, I'm going to put the money down on it before I spend it for something else, you know. So that was my first sale. And those people in the office, they were sick because they didn't take him. Because that was such an easy deal. All of them, that's the only one I have ever had that was that easy, you know.
And how much commission did you get?
6% of the selling price. And the selling price, I think, was maybe about $3,000. So that would be 3 times 6, 1,800. That'd be 1,800. But I didn't get the whole 1,800 because I'm a salesman. I got 40% of it because I was not, it was not my listing. The person who got the listing got 20% of the 18, and then I got 40%. And then the broker who was running the office got the other 40%. So I got 40%. So 4 times 3, 3 times 8 is 24. About $620. $24 I got out of that. Well, that was a big lump sum, you know. And I went and put it right in the bank. I didn't have any special bills, you know. So I put it in the bank. And then after that, I got busy trying to get my own listings because I found out that, well, if you get your own listing, you make 60% of the sale. So I got on the phone and I started calling people. You want to sell your house? And one lady, I got the wrong number. I was dialing with a certain number, and I didn't get the number I was dialing. I got a wrong number. And so this lady was so nice, And I told her, I said, oh, I was looking for such and such a number. She said, no, that's not the number. My number is so and so and so and so. So I just said, well, you got a house you want to sell? And she said, yes, how'd you know? I said, well, I didn't know. I was just looking for houses for sale. And she said, and she lived out of the area, but the house she owned was on the east side, over near our office. And she said, yeah, I want to sell it. And I says, well, what's the address? So she gave me the address, and it happened to be near our office. And so my broker and I went right over and looked at it. And then I came back and called her up, and I says, how much you want for it? And she, whatever price it was, well, my broker just said, well, we'll buy it, we'll buy it, we'll buy it. And we offered her like $1,000 less than what she said. And she took it because she was going to get all cash, you see. And because he had money, and he was Al Maddox was the broker I was working for. And he was considered the black millionaire in L.A. at that time.
And what year was that?
1944. And so he had cash money to work with. And I told him, I said, well, it's my listing. I found it. And I want to go in with you on this one. And I had saved up some money, too. See, I had made more than this one sale that I just told you about. I had about $2,000 of my own that I had saved up, you know. I says, I want to go in with you on this one. I want to be partners on this. I want to speculate with you. So he let me go in with him, and we bought it, and we didn't have to put up a $1,500 each. Because we got it, I guess we must have got it for $3,000. But I know we put up $1,500 each, so I guess that was the price, $3,000. Yeah, that was it, $3,000 with the whole thing. So I put up $1,500, he put up $1,500. And while we had it in escrow, we resold it. Because we had a 30-day escrow. And so we resold it for $4,200. So that meant we made $1,200. Right quick. But you see, we took a small down payment. We didn't ask all cash. And lots of people could buy if you take a small down payment, but they didn't have big payments, you know. We took like $500 down. And see, you could sell them fast like that because most people could have $500. They'd saved up $500 to pay down. And so we were going to carry a second. See, we'd already we let them get a first. We were going to carry a second for the difference, but it so happens that the loan company loaned us enough money for the new buyer. You know, for the new buyer, loaned enough money to pay us off, and with his down payment, we got our money all back in cash. So we didn't ever have to put up. I never did have to put up the $1,500. All I had to put up, the open escrow, it was $500. So I never did have to put in the whole amount because the other deal, we had what you call a double deal going at the same time, you know.
Verna, during this time, were there very many black brokers in town?
No, there weren't too many. Just a few.
Because I know there was the restrictive housing covenant.
Yes.
So, which year, 1946 or 48. 48.
Uh-huh.
And how was that affecting your work and where people lived?
Well, that's it. We had to sell the houses mostly on the east side. There weren't many on the west side that we could buy, sell, because they were restricted. But a few people on the west side would sell anyway, the whites, because they decided, well, if one black family got in, they decided, well, we're going to move. And they'd sell it anyway, and the blacks would take the chance on buying it, knowing it was restricted. And they said, because we can rent it out anyway. We can't live in it, but you can rent it, you know.
What would happen if you lived in it?
They could make you move. Legally, they could make you move, because the restriction said no blacks could occupy it. And a few would take a chance on it. But we also had some Jewish people working with us. They'd buy it, and then they'd sell it. Of course, it was still restricted, but they would sell it to blacks. They didn't care who they sold to, as long as they got their money, you know. And some black people got sued, and they had to go to court. Like in Sugar Hill area, The blacks bought in there like they'd buy a big house for $7,000. That same house now would be like $200,000. And so lots of the blacks went over in Sugar Hill area. They call that the Sugar Hill area. East of Western Avenue to Normandy and north of Adams, between Adams and Washington Boulevard. They call that the Sugar Hill area. And one of the silent movie stars, Ethel Waters and Hattie McDaniel, they were one of the first to buy in that area.
And, did you know them?
Yeah, I knew them. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. They used to invite me to their parties. They'd have these fabulous house parties, you know, and they'd invite me to their parties. And they were very nice. And they got sued, but the group of them got together and got lawyers, and they won so that they didn't have to move. And then the NAACP started stepping in then, you know. And I bought my first lot on the west side, because it was still my ambition to build my own home. Up until that point, I still haven't built my own home,
but
I always wanted.
Huh? You're still living with your parents?
Well, no, but that time I had bought my own house on the east side.
Uh-huh.
And for $2,100. I still own that house, too.
Really?
A six-room frame house on Hooper, just north of Vernon. And that strip in there between Vernon and 41st Place was the nicest section on the east side for colored to live. And there was a nice little section. And this was a six-room house, and the man was about to lose it. And I got it for $300 down, and then I assumed his loan. He had an you would call it FHA loan now, but it was something else then, a government loan, and 4% interest. And he had gotten 6 months behind, couldn't keep up his payments. So I gave him $300 for his equity, and then I assumed his loan, which was $1,800, and at 4% interest, and I paid $18 a month on it. And so I was living in my own house then. And
you were single during this time?
Yeah, and my son was going to grammar school by this time. And so, let me see now, what was the point I was going to bring out? About
when you bought your lot on the west side?
Oh, yeah. So I still wanted to build my own home, although I call this first house my stepping stone, you know. And that's what I tell lots of the people, my customers. I'd show them a house and it wasn't what they wanted. I said, but use this as your stepping stone. I said, you can't afford to buy what you want right now, so start at the bottom and go up. Don't try to start at the top. When you don't have top money, you don't have enough money to buy what you really want. Let this be your stepping stone. And I could talk them into it, and they'd buy it, you know. So I still call this my stepping stone, and I said, well, I still want to build my own home. So this vacant lot was for sale over on Gramercy Park, cute little private street built on a circle. And they had a big colonial-style house next door to it. And they wanted to sell the house and the lot together, and they couldn't do it, so they decided to sell it separately. They'll sell the lot for $3,500 and the house for something more. I don't know, but I didn't want the house. I just wanted the lot. So, I said, this is just what I want. Oh, I got all excited, and I called up the agent, had a sign on. I called the agent to buy it, and so when I gave her my phone number, it was on the east side, and she assumed that I was colored, because she couldn't tell by the way I was talking that I was colored up until I gave her my phone number. Then she said, are you colored? And I said, yes. And she said, well, we can't sell it to colored. And I got so mad, but not to her. She didn't know I was mad. Within myself, I was mad. And so I made up my mind, I'm going to get this lot one way or the other.
And the year was?
That was 1946. And I got mad. I said, I'm sick of these. I said, Peckerwoods. Trying to keep me from enjoying life and having what I want. And I'm willing to work and pay for it. And so there was a Jewish fella. No, he wasn't Jewish. I don't know what nationality he was. He might have been Irish. But he was working in our office, too. And he was a speculator. He would buy properties and resell them. And he was very nice. And I went back and was crying on his shoulders, telling him that I really wanted this lot. He said, "Well, Verna, I'll buy it for you." So he went and bought it for me. I put up the money, however, and he bought it in his name. Well, in his girlfriend's name. And so the woman, the salesperson for the lot, she had been warned ahead of time that this white man had a colored woman over there looking at this lot. Because, see, I took him over to show him the lot. I said, because when you call to talk about buying it, you want to know what you're talking about. So I took him over and showed him the lot. And one of the old nosy neighbors, who was the prejudiced white man, saw us. And he called the real estate agent, said, "Now," and he took the man's license number from his car and found out who he was and gave the salesperson the man's name and license number to his car. Said, "Now, if he calls you about this lot, don't you sell it to him," because he had a colored woman over there showing it to him. So sure enough, when the man called about the lot, she knew all about him showing over there with me looking at the lot. And she said, "Well, I'm sorry, I can't sell you the lot." He says, "Why?" "Because you had a colored woman over there looking at the lot." He says, "A colored woman? What do you mean I had a colored woman over there looking at the lot?" "Well, one of the neighbors said he saw you over there with this colored woman looking at the lot." He said, "That was no colored woman. That was just a dark-haired white woman." So that old man needs to change his glasses. It was about dusk dark, you know. And he could have made a mistake. And I'm not all that dark anyway. And so she fell for it, you know. She believed him. She believed him because he got mad. He said, "Oh, she'd get insulted if you knew she's called a colored woman." So she's just a dark-haired white woman. And so she went on and sold him the lot. And naturally, when he buys the lot, he signs a deed over to me right away in the same escrow to protect me in case he dies or something. Well, I still got my lot, you know. But I didn't record it right away. I waited a while, you know, waited until the escrow closed. And then I recorded my deed. And she kept watching it, because I guess she got a little suspicious after she went on and sold it to him. She kept watching it, and when my deed was recorded, she found out that I was the lady with the same phone number that she had called, her before. She was really on the ball, all right. And, you know, she called me up and told me that, "Well, you bought it, but you know you can't live in it, don't you? Now, here's just a vacant lot, and I had nothing on it. I wouldn't expect to live in a vacant lot." And I just said to her, "Well, if I can't live in it, I have some white relatives who can." Oh, boy, she shut up there. She didn't bother me anymore. So that was in 46. Well, I wasn't able to build yet anyway, and I knew the lot was restricted, and I had made up my mind I'm going to build on it if I have to live there as the maid, because I was just determined to. That was the last straw that broke the camel's back, because I had been looking for years to buy a lot in a nice neighborhood so I could build the kind of home I wanted. And every time I'd find one that I wanted, they wouldn't sell it to me, you know. And so I decided, well, I'm going to get this lot before I get too old to enjoy it. And so I was going to build anyway, but so happens that while I'm waiting to save my money to build the house, well, which was 2 years later, the restrictive covenant was broken down in 1948, because I had bought the lot in 46. And so then I just rejoiced and jumped for joy that I could build my dream house now. And I built a modern redwood house out of California redwood. I always wanted the California wood, you know, the redwood. Because I'd been up in the California, where they had the redwood trees, you know. I'd been up there on one of these tours, you know, and saw those beautiful big trees. And I said, when I build a house, I want my house made out of redwood, California redwood. So that's what I did. I built a house out of redwood and glass. It was a modern house, but it was this misplaced value, really, because this modern house mixed in with these older homes, to me, and later, you know, later when these other areas opened up, well, I said, oh, well, that's still a misplaced value, you know. And
what do you mean, misplaced value?
Because it's the house is just look like it's out of place. It's in the wrong neighborhood. A modern house in with older houses, just out of in a misplaced value. So in the meantime, I had married again, and my husband died. I lost my last husband. He died, and then I decided.
Williams.
Yeah, Mr. Williams died, and I lived in the house 30 years though. So when he died, the house, I had gotten in my mind, now this is misplaced value. I wasn't as happy with the house then as I was at first. And it was a big house, and I didn't feel I wanted to live in that big house by myself. So I sold the house. I built it for, let's see, it cost me about $34,000 with the lot and the building. It cost me about $34,000. So I sold it for $100,000 later. You know,
in which year was that?
That was in 1949. I sold it for $100,000. And then I...
Wow.
Investment. Yeah, it was very good. And by that time, Leimert Park had opened up. See, Leimert Park was an area I always wanted to live in because all these houses over here were new. But they wouldn't sell the colored in here because it was all restricted. But the restrictive covenant had been broken. So I said, well, now I get to go to the area I really always wanted to go in the first place. So I always feel that I have a guiding angel because now this particular, and then I bought this house here. I live in Leimert Park now. And this house was built in 1956, and my house that I sold was built in 1949. So this house that I bought in Leimert Park is newer than that one, because this was the street where the Black Dahlia's body was found. There was a case that was never solved here in L.A. where a girl who dressed in black, and they call it the Black Dahlia case, she was killed and dumped over here in this vacant land. This was all vacant land on this street. And that's where they found her body, on Norton Avenue, 39th and Norton. This was all vacant land then. But they started building these houses, and they built them in 1956, you see. So this block is the newest block in Leimert Park area, because most of the other houses were built and started in 1941. But this one was 1956 in this area. So I finally got in the neighborhood I wanted, and I'm very happy in this little house. It's a six-room modern house with the garage on the front, so I enjoy it very much, and I don't feel too lonesome in this house by myself because it's all on one story. My other house was a two-story house, you see. So I really enjoy it.
After the restrictive housing covenant was lifted, were there still problems, even though that legally you could buy a house anywhere you wanted, or was it really just wide open and people were buying houses? African Americans were buying houses anywhere they wanted.
No, there was still a problem because the real estate brokers would get together, the white real estate brokers would get together, and say have what you call a gentleman's agreement, and they would say they wouldn't say, well, we can't sell it to you because you're colored. If they would have an open house, they'd let you look, and if you were interested in buying it, they would say, oh, I'm sorry, I already got an offer on it. When they were lying, they didn't have an offer, but they would just say that, you know. And the people would, some of them would accept it, and some of them called the hand on and got caught, too, and got sued for doing it. And so we still had a long ways to go. And then another thing they did, when we'd go around soliciting listings, one man told me this to my face. Well, you folks insist on taking over our neighborhood, and we're going to let you have it, but you're going to sure pay for it. And that's when prices started going up. They started charging more to the blacks than they were for anybody else. Like if they were selling a house for $3,000 to just the people they wanted to sell it to, a black come along, they'd say $5,000. And the blacks were pouring in here so fast and so desperate for houses that they were paying it. Because, see, they thought they couldn't do any better, you know.
They were paying. Before this, before the 1948, was it really hard if you were black to find a place to live? Because you were saying before there weren't many rentals available. Why was that? That there weren't many rentals?
Well, because, see, they had started building the apartments. Uh-huh. And there weren't that many houses available to sell to colored. We were restricted. We had to sell east of Avalon Boulevard was the line then. Then finally they opened up Avalon over to Maine. As soon as they'd open up, well, the houses would go like hotcakes because the new area had opened up and the whites started running. And see, they'd run from the east side, those whites who were living on the east side, from the east side to the west side. So when the restricted covenant broke, and the colors started coming to the west side, well, the blacks started running from the west side up in the hills. Like, that's when the Baldwin Hills and View Park started. The blacks were selling out to us here on the west side and going build. That was all vacant land up in there. I remember the first house in Baldwin Hills, this Jewish fellow that was working at our office, he had one of the first houses built up there in that area. And he had it built for $25,000. Now those houses sell for $400,000 and $500,000. But the first house could for $25,000. I could have bought one up there for $20,000, but I never did like the hills because they didn't have any public transportation. And I figured every place you go, you got to walk or either take your car. And so I was never inspired to go up in the hills.
So when was the first house built then up in Baldwin Hills?
That was about 1948, right after the restriction covenant was broken, because it was before I built my house in 49 on Gramercy Park. And so instead of building that house there, I could have bought one and built Baldwin Hills and built. But however, I guess my lot would have cost a little more, because I got my lot for $3,500. And probably would have been about $5,000 for a lot up in Baldwin Hills at that time.
Now this is all pretty much when you were building houses and everything during the war, during World War II.
Yeah.
How did that war affect you, and what kinds of, did you know people who went off to the war, and what was it like during that time?
Oh, yeah, well, things got good then because, see, lots of jobs opened up for blacks. And they got jobs working in the shipyard. And that's why so many blacks were coming in here to get these jobs at the shipyard. And at the, who were building planes, whatever you call them. And so there were lots of jobs open. Oh, and even they even started hiring colored girls to run the streetcars. They hadn't started with the buses. Then we had the streetcars then. And they had colored girls, conductors, running the streetcars, too. So there were lots of jobs open up. And lots of people were rooming. I made lots of money in my real estate just finding rooms for people. And one lady had a house with a big yard, and she had all her rooms filled. And she'd rent space in her yard for people to come and park their car and sleep in their car. Some people would come out here in their cars, and they'd have to sleep in their cars because they couldn't find a room even. And so this lady, she had a big yard, you know, and she'd let them park the car. She charged them to park the car, and then they'd sleep in the car, come in her house and use the bathroom, you know. And so...
Where were they coming from?
Oh, the South, mostly, you know, like Louisiana and Texas, Oklahoma. Most Louisiana and Texas people were coming out. And but I say, everybody was renting rooms then, too. I even had my house full of roomers. I always said roomers paid for my house on the east side. You know, I had a three-bedroom house. The one I got for $2,100, I had three bedrooms. I rented out two of the rooms, and then I slept in one room, and my son slept on the service porch. I had a long service porch glassed in, so I had him a studio couch out there. So I said my roomers paid for my house. And I hurried up and paid for it, too, because my dad always taught me that nothing is yours until it's paid for. So that was my goal, is to get my house paid for. So when I got that one paid for, it was easy for me to to get something else because I didn't have to pay bills on that one I already had.
Do you remember World War One?
Yeah, I remember World War One. I remember first time I ever had whole wheat flour was during World War One. We'd always just had white flour, and World War One they had a shortage of flour, and Papa used to buy flour by the 100-pound bags. And he comes home with this 100-pound bag of whole wheat flour, and ooh, my mother said, "I don't want this old dirty-looking flour." That's what made me remember World War One, because Mom was complaining about this whole wheat flour, you know, didn't realize it was good for you, you know. She just called it dirty-looking flour. And she'd make biscuits. She made hot biscuits every day for every morning for breakfast. We had hot biscuits. And it made out of whole wheat. Well, that was really good for you, but we didn't know it, you know. And
this
it tasted all right. Yeah, that was in Texas. Yeah, it tasted good. And one of my uncles went to the Army. Papa didn't have to go because he was married and had a family. But his brother had to go because he wasn't married and he didn't have a family. And my brother's the one that brought my father back this Winchester gun from World War One. And he was a single man. So that's what I remember about the World War One, and let's see, what else can I remember about it? Well, I guess that's about the main thing I remember was this bright, this dark flour that we had to use.
And then how about the Depression? Was the Depression hard for you?
No, it wasn't hard for me because that's when I bought my house, my first house. That's when this man was losing his house, and I bought it from him for $300 down. See, I had, if I make a dollar, I could save 75 cents of it. I always knew how to save my money, so I had saved by the time that this house came along. I had saved my money, and I had. Oh no, I didn't. No, I'm sorry. That's right. I'm getting ahead of my story. That's right. I only had $100. When this house came along, and but my son had $100 because he had people always. He was such a friendly little boy that people always giving him nickels and dimes, you know, because he's so friendly. And he had a dime bank, and he'd put his dimes in this little bank. When he'd get $5, it would be full, and he'd have to go empty it out. So we'd take the $5 and go put it in the bank, and open an account for him. And he had saved $100. By the time this house came available for me to buy. And so I asked him, could I borrow his $100? He said, yeah, if you pay me interest like the banks pay me. and so I borrowed his $100, and I had $100. So I needed another $100. So I had a good friend in San Diego that had a job as a social worker, making $25 a week, and she lived with her parents, and she had a little girl, just like I had a little boy. She had a little girl, and we were friends. And I just made sure she'd lend me this $100. I called her, I'm asking her to lend me $100. She made the flimsiest excuse why she couldn't lend it to me. But I found out later she was just jealous because I was getting ahead of her. I was buying a house and no job, and she had a job and couldn't buy a house. So she wasn't going to help me to buy a house. But she made some kind of flimsy excuse why she couldn't lend it to me. So I didn't consider her my friend after that. But I didn't get mad at her. I just treated her with fed her out of a long-handled spoon, as the old saying goes. I didn't fall out with her, but I wasn't as friendly with her as I used to be. But anyway, I had two friends here in L.A., so I called one friend, a lady friend, whose husband was an automobile mechanic also. He had his own business. So I just asked her to lend me $50 because I figured it might be a hardship to ask her for $100. And she said, oh, sure, Verna. When I told her what I wanted with it, she was proud of me. She says, oh, sure. I'm sure my husband will lend it to you. So she called him up, and he said, okay, and I went over and got the $50 and signed all I did was signed a note. I owe you $50. Then I had a man friend, not a boyfriend, just a man friend of the family, who was a waiter at the Club Alabama, and he made good tips because they catered to white trade, and he made good tips. So I figured he could afford to lend me $50. So he did. He loaned me $50. So I had my $300 and I bought the house. And then the house was so filthy because the lady had six children. The man and his wife had six children, and she was a poor housekeeper. But she kept the kids clean, but she didn't keep her house clean. So I had to have the house renovated inside before I could move in it. And I got all that done for $150, $50 down, I mean $15 down, and $15 a month. The man did all that work for me, painted all inside, cleaned the floors and everything for $150. So then I moved in. And before I could get straightened out good, I had my rooms rented. And I didn't even have a job. But I just had confidence in myself that I could handle it because the payments were only $18 a month. I say only, but that was the going rate at that time. But now it just seems such a little. But it was $18 a month. And rents, I had wanted to rent a little apartment in the neighborhood. A man and his wife lived in a double, and they had the other side of it for rent for $18 a month. And I wanted to rent it, and he wouldn't rent it to me because I had a child. And that insulted me when he told me he couldn't rent me his apartment because I had a child. I said, "What do you think my child is, a dog?" And he just stood there and laughed at me. But he still wouldn't rent it to me. And I was walking home mad, and I saw this sign on this house in the same neighborhood. It was a nice little neighborhood. Same neighborhood for sale.